Welcome back. This is episode 20 of Books Closed.
This episode is sponsored by Tattoo Smart, your resource for digital tattoo design tools, and Machine Co., online video workshops that teach you how to be smarter than your tattoo machine.
Before we start, I want to remind you that we've teamed up with Tattoo Smart for a giveaway. You can go to booksclosedpodcast.com and enter to win a $500 gift card to Tattoo Smart along with some Books Closed swag. With $500 from Tattoo Smart, you can load up on a shit ton of digital design tools. And if you haven't checked them out yet, this could be a great opportunity. So go to booksclosedpodcast.com and enter to win the $500 gift card from Tattoo Smart. The contest ends on March 10th, so make sure you go enter now, and the winner will be announced on this very show the following day. Now that we've taken care of all the matters of housekeeping, after the episode we had last time around, I'd say we all need to take a deep breath. Let's calm it down. The world is not coming crumbling down around us, although it can feel like it at times. So let's sit down with tattooer Lindsay Carmichael and have a good old-fashioned conversation about that tat life. I met up with Lindsay recently on his 27th tattoo anniversary while he was doing a guest spot in New York City at Five Points Tattoo, and our conversation sounds a little bit like this. We're here in Brooklyn.
We're here. I want to say thank you very much for having me. It means very much to me to be able to do this and that you've asked. I am super proud to be able to say that I came and did it, and I really appreciate it. I want to say thank you very much.
The honor is all mine, and I mean that. We tried to link up in San Francisco, but you were birthday partying instead, so you're probably having a better time.
Maybe. I'm going there, though, in May. I'm looking forward to doing that. Today marks a very specific, special day in my life. It's also another kind of a birthday. This day, today, February 1st, is my 27-year tattoo anniversary. I did my first tattoo.
That's amazing.
February 1st, 1992.
What was the tattoo?
Some initials on my leg.
Oh, it was on yourself.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. I wish I knew the day that I started, because I don't really know the day. I know generally when it was.
I should let you know that these are things that I have a real habit of keeping track of every last little bit of everything. Like, I've got all scraps of paper and dates and every bit of so much of everything that I am interested in, I still have. So knowing the exact day to me isn't out of the ordinary, but I realize that's not what everyone does.
Right. So you're probably a collector of things then too, right?
Crazy collector of lots of stuff. Yes.
Yeah. What's your biggest thing? Are you a record collector?
It's probably music and tattoo. It's definitely music and tattoo related stuff.
Would you say that music was kind of your gateway into tattooing?
It 100% was.
It's either that or skateboarding for 95% of people, I think.
It was both. It was both. Because originally I skated I'm 51 now, so I started skating when I was about 10. So 41 years ago. And we used to live in Los Angeles. We moved from an area of LA that's near the airport over to the San Fernando Valley, which they call that over the hill, which is, it's still Los Angeles, but it's over there. Mm-hmm. So once I was there, there were skate parks that you could, this is in the 70s when skate parks were new. There's skate parks anywhere and everywhere now, but you had to travel and go and find the ones that they were first building in the 70s. So the one that I went to was near my house and I used to skate there. This is about 77, 78 through about 80. And I wasn't really interested in music at all. I didn't really have any specific interest in music before that. And then all of my older brothers and sisters had bands and stuff that they liked, but I didn't connect to that. It connected to skateboarding. So when I started going to the skate park, this is in the late 70s, just before the early 80s, was basically the birth of punk rock in California. Yes, it was a thing that was known in back east here and in England, but it was kind of really when it took hold in California was right at that period of time. And I was super young. I was like 11, 12 years old. And I first became aware of music that would have been in, that I was interested in by way of skating at the skate park. I saw a flyer for a Black Flag show. And at this point I had been listening to bands that I'd been hearing on a radio station in Los Angeles. Rodney on the Rock used to have a radio show. Rodney Bingenheimer used to have a show called Rodney on the Rock on K-Rock in LA. And I used to listen to that. I caught hold of that some way, somehow, I don't know. Maybe because they used to play his show at the skate park, now that I think of it. And they used to play punk bands on his show, and that's when I got introduced to that. And then through music, I found tattoos, basically. That was that whole chain of events exactly like that.
It's funny because I'm 32, so I went through similar steps, but, you know, decades after you did.
Just a little down the line.
Yeah, but it was still Black Flag and skateboarding in the 90s. Isn't it funny how it's like that's the package that you have to acquire to unlock certain other things, and then we all end up in the same place.
I love it. I've got to say it. I love it. That's the same kind of equation, and that people somehow find those same two things or some variation of those same two things, and then they kind of wind up in the same place. To me, that's like a incredible thing that could happen to so many different people, and they kind of find themselves around the same area. I love that.
You know, that's what people would consider like the normal tattooer upbringing. But now we got to think that there are tattooers coming from such different backgrounds that it's almost weird that two tattooers can be in a room together and not find a lot of common ground.
I don't know how two tattooers could be. Well, wait a minute. Let me restate that. I feel like before, maybe before the last 10, 15 years, the statement that you made, I would say, is 100% true. But now I find being involved in it for a really long time and being around it constantly, it's my whole life, I find that the statement that you made is less and less familiar with people that are now coming into tattooing that don't have anything to do with any of those things. They have a whole different background, interests, and stuff like that, which to me is something I've had to adjust to because, like you said, you could be around another tattooer regardless of age or whatever, but you kind of find that common ground of, you know, the common ground of like what we were talking about, music or skateboarding, or your interest in true interest in each of those things, and then true interest in what led you to tattoos. But I find now that there's a little bit less of the same genuine quality all the time. It's a hard way to state it, but I think that's the best way I can do it.
So what do you think are some of the keys to longevity in tattooing? You'd be the one to ask.
Once I got wrapped up in it, once I became totally wrapped up in it, all I wanted to do was be around it. That never went away. I'm just as interested now, more interested now than I ever was then, because now I've had the same amount of everything about all of it interests me. And now I have it even more because there's so much more of it that you can see and things that you don't have to seek out as much as when I first started trying to seek the things out that I was truly interested in. Because this was all pre, you know, looking on your phone or looking on your computer or having access to it all the time. So, I mean, this is in the time when if I, you know, wanted to get tattooed by somebody who lived in Europe, sometimes I just fucking went to Europe and didn't even let anybody know that I was on my way over there and just showed up. I went to all the way to Switzerland without any real plans, except for that I wanted to get tattooed by Philip Liu. And I was staying in a whole separate area, and it was like a 6-hour train ride, and I somehow got a hold of them by telephone, like a landline telephone. Nobody was in the shop that day, and I just ended up not doing it. But that was sort of a symptom of that time, that you may not work, but you know, now you everything is kind of like in line and you're in constant communication. Like you and I were texting with each other on, I was on the subway on the way over and stuff like that. And in those days it was not really the same kind of a thing. It was, I have the same interest and the same, amount of, trying to chase those things down. Only now it is maybe even a little bit more because it's more obtainable. It's less of a big gamble of like, hey, I'm going to go try and fucking find this thing. Now it's like, I'm going to go find that fucking thing. I'm going to go do that.
Right. So if you had to pick one, what's more exciting to you? Seeking information that you may not find, or trying to seek the information that you know you're going to find? Or are they just two totally different things?
I feel like they're two totally different things, and they're equally as interesting to me only because I spent so much time with the chase of trying to find that stuff.
That now you get the reward finally.
I got to say that now having the reward of that and having put the time into that, you kind of can get to that reward a little faster. It's not something I expect. I expect nothing. I never expect anything. I keep expectations for everything. I just don't expect anything for myself. But now when I know that those things are doable and that they can happen, it's really cool to be able to know like, man, I'm going to go after this thing and I'll probably be able to do it. When before I spent a lot of time going, I'm going to try to go after this thing and I probably won't end up doing it, but at least I'll, nothing's going to stop me from trying to find it.
Right. Do you think coming from that is why you're able to manage your expectations? Because you kind of had to.
Yeah, I guess maybe so. I mean, now that, you know, thinking about it now and you asking that without really ever contemplating it before, I guess that's probably true.
That's what we do here. Yes. We talk about things that maybe don't even need to be talked about sometimes.
What's great though, I've got to say, what's great is that I see that I've been following it a little while and watching the way that you do it, and you communicate in such a way that you are able to make it easy for people to answer the questions that you're asking and get a real answer out of it. And I'm totally impressed with that. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're going to have to grease my head to fit it out of the door after we finish up. But so anything I've ever heard about you through other people has always been how you're just a positive, good person. And honestly, I feel like there aren't a lot of people that you hear that about. Like solely, like there's just nothing else. Lindsay's a great guy. Lindsay's so positive. And I can tell, but just from body language, the second I met you, that you're just a positive person.
It's very sweet of you to tell me. And it's very, very nice of people to have that impression of me and to relate it to you in a real way. And it means very much to me to be able to hear that and to, cause that's all I'm shooting for anyway, is just trying to be myself and trying to keep it, you know, I'm happy to do things like this. And I think that, you know, if that shows, that's great. That makes me feel good to know that that's the kind of response you've gotten about my name.
Yeah. And I feel like a question that I ask sometimes is, why are tattooers so negative? Just cause I think it's funny, but maybe we should focus more on positive. Why aren't we more positive? Maybe that's a better way to ask it.
I can let you know that there are negative times for sure.
Of course.
As anybody would have.
Sure.
But
but some people are just a bummer and other people are generally like trying to make the best of something.
Okay. What I find and what I have found in general, and I can say probably the big percentage of the time, I have to say the truth is that I'm not saying that everybody I meet is a downer. It's nothing like that. But in the tattoo world, maybe not so much now. Maybe not so much now, but definitely over the amount of time that I've been involved and the people that I've met, it attracts the best and the worst of all different kinds of people, all different lifestyles. And I feel like during my period of time leading up till now, it attracted just people that were generally unhappy about lots of stuff. And maybe they wound up tattooing, who knows what, but they wound up tattooing because they didn't have any other plan, or maybe it was an easy route that they ended up going down. And I think when you have that kind of when you think that way then no matter where you end up, if it's happy at the time that, or makes you feel like, okay, cool, I'm gaining some ground here, I'm getting successful in some way. If you are thinking that way anyway, you're going to find a way to make it a bummer, or make it a bummer for people around you, or negative in some way, maybe not all the time, but some way for yourself, no matter what it is. And that, you know, includes what we do.
There's probably been times in the past where maybe I've felt critical towards people who tattoo as like a last resort. But the more I think about it, like, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that.
Well,
sometimes that's just the hand someone's dealt, and then they rise to the occasion of doing whatever, whether it's tattooing or something else.
Right. I think the truth is that because this is what you and I do, and because we are interested in it to a certain, you know, depth, this is what you and I are going to see, because this is the world that the tattoo world is basically all that we're wrapped up in. Aside from my wife and my kids, I'm married to her and they're my life. And then after that, it's tattooing. And then music and tattooing kind of are close, you know, close together, but it's pretty much tattooing and then music. And then that's like the whole world. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, and all of the stuff that you and I know nothing about, I'm sure that that's exactly how people fall into anything.
Yeah.
That maybe it's a last resort. Maybe, you know, their dad was a, you know, their dad worked in the television industry. So next thing you know, you're a cameraman and you're doing it 40 fucking years. Who knows?
Yeah.
It could be the exact same.
Right. That's true. Is your son tattooing?
Yeah.
What's that like?
It's crazy. Number one, let me just begin to tell you that.
How old is he?
Just turned 24. He just did his first couple of tattoos. He, over like the last, say, 10 years, I'd say exactly, because about 14 was when he first started coming and hanging around the shop. Not where I am now, but the shop that I was before that. He kind of loosely started to describe some interest in what it was, but at 14 years old, you don't really know. Not everybody really knows anything.
So you didn't take it that seriously at the time?
I did, because I wanted to, but I also know what he is because he's part me. So I know him probably better. You know, he's my kid. So I wanted to take it seriously and I wanted to believe that that was true. And I'm sure that it was, but at the time there was just no fucking way to go anywhere near that.
Right.
So then there were a couple of like loose attempts at him kind of working at the shop, being a helper, but he was skating, same as me. He was skateboarding and out kind of doing his own shit. And it didn't really, you know, like coming in and mopping the floor and doing shit before the rest of the crew or me or anybody showed up, or that didn't really go with the plan. He kind of thought it might be more, you know, different. And once he saw that there was a lot more structure to it, he was a young teenager. I don't blame him. That's cool. He went and did, you know, what young teenagers do.
Right.
Which isn't spending all your time inside of a tattoo shop cleaning up after people and shit like that. So he started to show super focused interest in what we do over the last, I'd say, 2 years. And I've been at the shop where I'm at now with Tim at Classic the last year and a half. And pretty much when I went over there to start, he came with me and took on a couple of days as a shop helper there and, you know, expressed mature interest in what we do. And because it is so important to me, and because it, like I say, it's my whole life is wrapped up in it, I could tell that there was a difference in what he was trying to say and how serious he was. So he started doing some painting. And I have to say, dude, like, got a hold of it quickly. I mean, this is another symptom of what I'm sure we'll probably go over this, but information about how to do it is immediate. You can get it right now, immediately. Mm-hmm. And when I started painting or even attempting to paint, which was in the mid to late 90s, it was a disaster. It was a fucking disaster. There was no way of finding any of these things out except for trying it. So I was trying it and it wasn't looking anything like the way that I wanted it to look until I finally got a hold of it, which was like 2001. And that was with the help of four tattooers that I'm still friends with, that individually right around that same little period of time gave me little bits of information that I still think of and use right now, right now. Like if I did a painting, or you and I did a painting here together, in my mind, I would think about the ways that those four people told me about those specific things. And I still think of those, that approach about how to do that stuff the exact same way as when I learned it then. But
isn't it funny how we hold on to that stuff?
Oh,
because I have the same thing where someone critiqued my portfolio however many years ago, and I still think about those basic things now. No matter how much you learn beyond that, it's like those basic things, you're always going to hear that one person telling it to you.
But that's because it shapes everything that you are.
Yeah.
Like if you did not ask that person to look at your portfolio, you knew that that was going to be something that was going to shape, probably in a, you know, in a way of being told like, hey, this part's no good, you know, which is what I would usually look for when I would ask somebody to look at tattoos that I did, was like, tell me what I'm doing wrong because I don't fucking know. Mm-hmm. But that's because those little bits of information, I've always said, those little building blocks, I've always talked about those things that you put together, like pieces of the puzzle, they shape everything that you are. So it would make sense that those things still are in your mind about, like, if you're doing water or something on a tattoo, you're like, I've got to do it this way because I asked and they told me to do it like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Keith, I have to tell you really quickly, when he started painting, he kind of had a lot of information around him just at the shop, from not just from me, but from other people that worked there too, about, oh, maybe you want to try it this way or do it this way. And he picked it up like now. And he's done some sheets of flash that, I mean, I probably couldn't paint it like that. That's the truth. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
And he's done a couple tattoos on himself, and we're at the beginning stages here of this kind of happening. So I'm proud of that.
Yeah. So is him showing this genuine interest in tattooing, is that the coolest thing that you could think could happen? Or does it make you nervous?
It's both. I got to be honest. It's both, because I know how critical he is of himself. I know how he, I know how important it is for him to for him to have people see the things that he's doing and think that it's done well, which is great. It's great. That's like a thing that he pushes himself for, always has.
Do you think he feels a particular pressure because you're his dad?
I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't really know, because I don't get that myself from him. I don't get that he feels like there's some kind of weight that's on him because of me. He has said things before, like he's gone to work at conventions with Classic that I have not gone to. As a matter of fact, it was the one that you were at in San Francisco. He went up there without me and was just a helper at the booth. And when he came back, he was like, man, everybody said like they knew who I was because I looked like you, or everybody says hi. And he didn't say like, man, there's so many people that you've met that you know, but by him going, man, everybody came up and they were saying, oh, say hi to your dad. That I think to him was like he was, maybe he saw a different side of something that he doesn't usually see because I was not there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he feels any kind of a weight or any kind of a expectation. I honestly don't know because of me. I think that he has different interests in terms of tattooing that are entirely different than what I interested in tattooing. I would like to think that he has the same kinds of, you know, like he's pursuing the same kinds of, you know, the look of things, the way that I think things look good for me, that hopefully he's had those things. Like he soaked those things in over his life, sometimes by not even paying attention, just by being in it.
Yeah.
So it's a mix of both of those things. I have a mix of both of those things. I want him to do well, and I want him to have his own trip and to take advice that I give to him and hopefully make it his own thing and have the. I hope that the same things that are important to me about all of this are begin to be as important to him.
Yeah, and when I think about it, it's almost. To me, it seems like even more of a hurdle for a kid to grow up basically in, you know, as part of tattooing, to find the same passion for it. Because I feel like a lot of what maybe drew you or me to it is like the mystery of it,
or
how unattainable it seemed. But when you're inside of it from this, like he was in every tattoo shop he ever walked in. He's like the coolest kid there, you know? So it's kind of amazing that he's still followed that thing.
I agree with that. I agree.
He should be like a lawyer or something. That'd be like the coolest thing that, you know, like the most opposite from his dad.
His sister is the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. She's about to just turn 16. She's like driving and stuff like that. And she gave a really, speaking of this, what you just said, she gave the most incredible answer to somebody. She has been able to go, she also has an interest in music. And it's not because I have been blasting music around the both of them or anything like that while they were growing up. I have an obvious interest in music, but I've never constantly been, listen to this band. Or this band is one of my favorite bands. Listen to them. No one did that to me. So I have let them, if they have an interest in music, cool. If I can help out with some of those things, cool. You have an interest in tattooing, I'll be happy to help out much as I can. But this is your deal. Well, because she developed an interest in music completely on her own, swear to God, she then got interested in some bands after being exposed to music that she knew that I liked just from me wearing the shirt or from going to see them and telling her about it or something like that. So let's say the Descendants, for example. They're not my all-time favorite band or anything like that, but they're a band that I like that I've been seeing since I was 15. So they were going to play one time recently, fairly recent. And we went to the show together, and just because of being around it, it's not because of anything different than anybody else, but just from being around it and from probably tattooing a bunch of people who have to do with music and people over years and like nearly three decades of time of tattooing people, you get connected to people that have the same kind of interest as you. And some of them end up being like, you know, they work for a band or a production company or something like that. So because of this, she and her brother have been able to see bands play like in from the viewpoint of like people don't usually get to go and see it that way. Like they're on stage or they get to be close to the stage or backstage and shit like that, which I'm super proud of being able to expose them to that kind of stuff. If that's the interest that they have, I'm like, man, I can help you with that. I know about that stuff. But long answer, sorry. I'm going to do this the whole time. Is like every,
that's what this is for.
Every answer is going to be so long.
That's what podcasts are all about. People just want to hear you talk. It's true.
Well, that's good because that's what there's going to be a lot of that.
Good.
Well, one time recently, she and I were at just a party, daytime kind of a situation where some friends of my wife's, and I've met them through my wife, had this party. And my daughter was with me because it was a Sunday. We're always together on Sunday. And there's a general question that people like to ask to kind of like, you know, break the ice or to just shoot the breeze when you're talking to tattooers' children. And they'll go, do you want to get tattoos? Are you going to get tattoos when you're old enough? And her answer was so brilliant. And it has to do with what we were talking about a minute ago about it. I mean, everybody knows everything, you know? And she said, they asked her that question and she said, why would I do that? To me, it was genius because her dad is covered in tattoos. Her stepmom's covered in tattoos. Her mother has tattoos. Now her brother is covered in tattoos. That's all she's ever seen. Mm-hmm. And she, not just the people in her, you know, that she knows in her, you know, her group that are, she's around all the time, but she's in high school. And there's people who have tattoos right in high school now. When I was in high school, it was like, you didn't catch anyone who had a fucking tattoo.
Right.
So she sees that stuff and sees that, you know, like we go to shows together, there's people that are covered in tattoos. It's what anybody, all like anybody her age or anybody else in the whole fucking world actually sees. All they see is heavily tattooed people. So to her, she's going like, why in the world would I do that? Well, why would I do the same thing as everybody else?
She's the real rebel.
Truly.
Yeah.
I just thought it was the most intelligent answer. I love that. I'm so impressed by that.
Yeah, that's cool. And it's insight that a lot of kids her age wouldn't necessarily have.
No, but that's cool though, because you're right about that. And it's also, it's an intelligent insight that she's, because of what she has been exposed to and also her own interests.
Right. And it's like a more mature point of view than an 18-year-old kid getting a tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Because think about all the shit we wanted to get before we were getting tattooed.
Oh, yeah.
Like all the tattoos that I thought I was going to have are definitely not the ones that I ended up with.
I'll tell you what, though. The ones that I thought I was going to have, a couple of them I did end up with, and I'm happy I did.
Yeah.
And there's my first idea was totally insane, and it was just off the top of my head at 15. I want to get this tattoo. I would get that tattoo now. I don't really think it would even be a joke, but it's definitely not something I would like go and try to get now. It'd have to be because it came from that time.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean though about if you, your ideas of getting tattooed and you know what it really ended up being entirely different.
Yeah. Well, because before you really dive into the imagery and stuff of tattooing, you're right. Just like, well, I like this, so I'll get a tattoo of that. I'll 100%. Just get a skateboard. I'll get a drawing of a skateboard on me. Just a skateboard, like top view.
Yeah, it's the deck with like the wheel maybe.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
Tight.
Are you feeling lost, hopeless, unsure what to do about spring breaks? And I'm not talking about your annual vacation to Myrtle Beach. I'm talking about when your spring snaps in two while you're tattooing. Don't just give up and trade all your coil machines for rotaries. Machine Machine is here to give you the goods, offering online video workshops to professional tattooers that will teach machine function, differences between liners and shaders, and a better understanding of the physics behind springs and their relation to frame geometry. Don't be ashamed that you're holding something in your hand every day that you know nothing about. This is an opportunity for all you tattooers to up your game and get in control of your equipment. There are no enrollment periods anymore, so sign up now and start your course today. Use code BOOKSCLOSED when signing up to get $50 off. It's all happening now at machinemachine.co. Don't forget to use coupon code BOOKSCLOSED for $50 off, and stay up to date with course information by following at machinemachine.co on Instagram. This week, we're also sponsored by Tattoo Smart, a marketplace for forward-thinking tools for tattooers, artists, and designers, empowering them to learn new digital skills and improve their design workflows. They collaborate with tattooers to create brush sets for Procreate and Clip Studio Paint, reference ebooks, digital color tools like the Abbott Color Wheel, and design and software tutorials. Tattoo Smart gives you the tools to speed up the process of conceptualizing and rendering time-consuming elements, allowing you to spend more time focusing on the composition of your tattoo design. You can check out all of the Tattoo Smart tools and tutorials at tattoosmart.com. And while you're there, check out the Battle Damage brush set for Procreate by Dave Tevenal. Composed of 8 paintbrushes and 22 marker, pencil, and liner brushes, the Battle Damage set is designed to make your digital designs look fully hand-rendered. Dave meticulously created these natural media brushes from the ground up, starting with high-quality scans and photos of fine art paper and physical brush, marker, and pen strokes. He designed custom grain source and nib images, experimenting and perfecting each brush. The result is an incredibly flexible set of tools for Procreate that mimic the small paper bleeds and grain texture of physical media and produce designs suitable for a wide variety of applications from art prints to tattoo designs. Find out more and get Battle Damage by Dave Tevenal on tattoosmart.com. And don't forget that while you're there, you can use discount code BOOKSCLOSED for 15% off any tools on the site, one use per customer. So that's tattoosmart.com. Use discount code BOOKSCLOSED for 15% off any tools on the site. So, after 27 years of tattooing, do you ever think about it and it seems trivial? Like, it seems like what you do is just... like maybe this has been, the whole thing's been a waste.
No, I have to tell you that regardless of whatever it is, I can give you a solid, that's not what I think. And I can tell you for sure that whatever I end up doing, the smallest tattoo, it doesn't matter. I always feel like it's the most important thing in the whole world. Not even really so much for the person who's getting it, although it, you know, it probably that should be my frame of mind, is like, man, this is the most important thing that they'll ever get. And they need to, I got to do the best thing for them, which I am. But for me, I try like every last little small tattoo, doesn't matter, arrow on somebody's wrist upside down, or like their mom's signature off of a greeting card, or their grandma's signature for whatever, like the way you copy them off of like a note that they bring in or whatever. Every single last one of them is the most important thing to me. And none of it has lost any of its weight or any of its significance. So I never think back about the amount of time or everything that's been put into it and think like, man, what have I done? What have I been doing? Because I'm proud of it. I'm like, I should tell you that when I was on the plane on the way here, I was thinking about, I don't know, the amount of time, just the amount of time that I've spent pursuing it. And there's like a couple, I should tell you that things in my life take me a really long time to figure out. It takes me so long to figure the most basic things out. And it took me until like my 20-year mark of tattooing, I realized the feeling that I had on that day was I was proud. I felt proud. And before that, I swear maybe up to that point, no kidding, the only thing that I knew I had a distinct feeling of pride or feeling proud about was my kids. I felt like, man, I accomplished something. I did that. And around the 20-year mark, February 1st, whatever, when it was 20 years, I had that same feeling and I identified it immediately as like, man, I'm proud of it. There's not a whole lot of things that I can associate that word to in my life, I guess, but I'm so proud of being able to say that, yeah, I wanted to do this thing and I knew that it was going to be fucking near impossible to do. At that time, I mean, I know that 27 years is not really that long compared to people that have been tattooing for like 40 or...
But how many of those are around still?
Well, one of them I wanted to get tattooed by yesterday or today, Mikey Perfetto, mm-hmm. who's right here in Brooklyn. But it's a crazy story. He and I don't know each other. It's crazy. I'm going to get into that in 1 second, but he is, and he still does great tattoos, or let's say people like... Bob Roberts, who just recently stopped after 44 years of tattooing, but still was.
Yeah.
Or, you know, people like that, that have been around for a really long time. Those are the ones that I think of that can say, man, I've been doing this a long time. Like if they said, man, I've been tattooing forever. Bill Salmon, for example, tattooed all the way up until just, you know, recently. And if you heard any of those people say, well, I've been doing this my whole life, I've been doing this shit a long time, I would I would never say like anything. You can't say anything about that. That's the truth. But even me now at this point, I would never say, man, I've been doing this my whole fucking life. I've been doing this shit a long time. I still don't feel that way. I still feel like I started like a year ago. So the heaviness of that and the importance of that has it hasn't ever changed. So I always feel like it. I want to do 27 more.
Yeah, and I feel like that's got to be one. When I first asked earlier the keys to longevity, I feel like whatever you've identified about tattooing, whatever it is that does it for you and continues to even after 27 years, I feel like that's what most people should be seeking a lot of times, because there's probably more people that tattoo for 20, 30 years or less and then quit compared to the people who do it literally for their entire life.
To me, I cannot understand that thing, like that concept of, well, I don't really tattoo anymore, I don't really do that, or I quit, or I stopped.
I'm super interested in people who have had that experience, because you don't hear about it a lot.
To me, I feel like I can't see that, man. I can't see that. I feel like if you're in it, I'm in it all the way. And it's not just the tattoo thing. It's anything. I mean, music would be the most obvious example, because I'm super interested in music or like, you know, any of the things that you really commit to, I see that you're committed like all the fucking way. So to me, like, stopping doesn't seem like it's even, I just can't fathom that. Like, the idea of, like, oh, I did that for a little while and now I stopped doing that. I'm doing this other thing. It's great. If you're comfortable with that, that's cool. Me, I can't see it.
Yeah. What if something happened, heaven forbid, where physically you couldn't tattoo?
It would break my heart. I'm telling you it would. I'd be broken by that. I've had like a hand injury one time that just scared the daylights out of me that I bet it was my right hand. And I just thought, fuck, my first thought was, what if something happens? What if I have this chronic pain and won't be able to do it? Or, you know, all these.
Gotta learn lefty.
Yeah, I probably would.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure I'm an adult and I would probably be able to deal with that. I would, if I were forced to, but I really just hope that nothing like that happens and I can continue to do what I want to do.
Right. Yeah. I would rather decide I hate tattooing and quit as opposed to being forced to quit.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
True of anyone,
I'm sure. It would kill me. It would kill me. It would be like being married to somebody for a long time, and then the person that you're married to dies, and then the person right after that dies not long after because they don't know what to do. It'd be like that.
So I'm interested in. You say that you still put as just as much intention and effort and passion into a small arrow tattoo.
Sure.
How do you do it? I think that's what people lose is the ability to
see it.
Just the ability to, like, mentally to do those kinds of tattoos forever and feel fulfilled from it. Because you're a tattooer's tattooer, and I feel like that comes with the part, you know, like that's what it is.
Well, okay. When I look at something like that, when somebody comes in and they say, you know, here's the shop helper goes out, right? And like, how can we help you? Oh, I want to get a tattoo today. Cool. Do you have anything in mind or anything on your phone? Which is, it's super common. That's what it is now.
That's the new flash wall.
It's the biggest flash wall. It's like the biggest flash wall. That phone. I don't hate it. It's cool. I mean, I would rather, of course, do tattoos that are on the actual wall at the shop.
But everyone has those, they say.
It's so crazy that it's the exact opposite. It's right. So insane.
Yeah.
The stuff that's on the walls is what's custom. It's true.
Yeah.
Like the things that are on the walls are the things that people don't get. That's custom work.
Right.
And then if you come in and you want, you know, it's cool. That's what you want. Cool. I try my hardest to do it the best way. And that's the truth.
Yeah.
But it's a feather that's turning into some birds that's small on your wrist or on your side or a dream catcher or any of those things that are slightly common in the last 2 or 3 years or whatever. Somehow, some way, people feel like that's, even though they're giving you a picture of a tattoo as, I want this because this is what I fell in love with.
They still think they're the first one to have it.
But you can't but you can't argue with them about it because that's not what I would do, and that's not, you know, that's not how I pursued it when I was younger. But I mean, I'm not younger. These are people who see it that way, and that's how they, I mean, the truth is that's how they've seen everything their whole life is on their phone.
Yeah.
So they know no different. So you can't be like, well, why don't you get some of the stuff on the, that's an insane argument. They don't understand that.
Yeah.
So
I like backing them up. I like, if they're under a spell or an illusion that what they're doing is unique and special, then all I want to do is enforce that.
Yeah. Because I always remember this goes back to, I'm going to keep going back in time here.
Let's go.
The guy who taught me to tattoo, his name is Rick Spellman, and he was a second generation tattooer. His dad was Dave Spellman, who also tattooed. He like tattooed Ed Hardy on the Pike and all this shit. And I was aware of Rick Spellman through music. So in this insane, weird turn of events, I ended up getting an apprenticeship with him. And I had not met him before that, but I'd been tattooed in his shop. So anyway, during the time that I was working with Rick, I think I inadvertently, naively, stupidly, really made a comment about a tattoo that when somebody came into the shop that they were not unhappy with. And I made some kind of a comment about, you know, oh, who did that or something stupid that I would just, that I basically never, ever said again since then. And that was probably 93 or four, something like that.
Just something critical of their tattoo.
I'm generally not an asshole to people about like the things that they have. Like I would never say like, that thing's a fucking piece of shit. Why did you do that? I would never do that. And the reason why, number one, I would never say that anyway. But the main reason is because I said something that sounded like that to him. After that person left, in a calm way, he wasn't saying like, you fucked up. But he said, hey, you know, one time when I was working at this shop, when I was learning, I was really, you know, I thought I knew my way around tattoos pretty good. And he was saying a lot by putting it in that way. And I know it. I knew it then. I know it more now. So he said that this guy came in and he had a tattoo on his forearm that Rick thought didn't look right. And he said, the guy asked him about the tattoo and said, what do you think of this one? The way that people will do sometimes when they'll say like, how much would you have charged for this? Or,
right.
You know, what do you think of this one? It's not, they are not asking you to be critical of their tattoo. They are not asking you to tell them it sucks. And Rick told me, this is probably 84 that he did this. He said, well, yeah, you know, I mean, I could fix that thing right up. And the guy went, well, I mean, I don't want it fixed up. I was thinking about getting something else. I just wanted to know what you thought of it. And he knew, like, I should have never said that, because now that person, and this is the reason why I don't do that, is now that person has it in their mind that the person who is, as far as they're concerned, the one who knows exactly all about this shit told them that thing doesn't look right. And that's all they're going to remember.
Mm-hmm.
So I try my hardest in every situation, whether they're asking me, whether they're not, if that's important to them, who am I to say, you know, anything different because I've done it a million times or because I wouldn't get it or who knows? There's lots of different reasons, but I'll never say to them like, this is, are you sure you want this because 100 other people have it? You're set on getting it, man. Cool with me. I'll do my best to make it look the way that you want it to look. That's where I'm going.
Because there's nothing wrong with people wanting that sort of stuff.
No.
It's, I think what we see as the funny thing is that they're pointing out that they wouldn't get the flash because everyone has it. Mm-hmm. So really, they should just realize that what they want is what everyone else wants. And then it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think to that generation of people that are coming in asking for that stuff, I feel like that's okay with them and that it's ingrained in them already. The statement that you just made, because of exposure of everything that... I mean, why wouldn't they want this thing? Like, you know, they probably already kind of know that, but that's because they've grown up in an entirely different way by looking at things that way. So they know everybody has it. That's the reason why they want to have it. That's cool. I mean, I wanted OP shorts so I could go like skateboarding in OP shorts when I was, you know, 11 years old. And that's was because everybody had OP shorts. So right. I know that a tattoo is a different thing, but it's along those lines of thinking I'm not unfamiliar with.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Do you think that as culture evolves and like in terms of tattooing that what we know as traditional tattoos could like the imagery that could just kind of cease to exist?
I feel like that term traditional tattooing is so insanely blown out of proportion at this point that using that is hard for me now. I would tell you traditional tattoo or this thing is a true traditional tattoo of one, what I think I, what that is means to me. Or I would say it to somebody who else who like you or me understands that language. But the idea of what an average person, say someone with their phone or a younger person comes in and says, oh, I want this traditional piece, right? Generally, that's not what that is. It could be. It could be because there's exposure. There's so much of it is exposed that they could be right on by calling it, I want this traditional tattoo, you know? But I personally find that more often people come in and they say like, oh, I just want something traditional. And that's not what that is. So because there is, to answer your question, because there's so much of it, because there's just such an insane amount of you can get your hands on anything at any time, that the chances of it going away, I feel like, are, it's impossible. It's become such a part of everything to people who don't know anything about any of this, who have no interest in anything in this. Even they know what that means for the, I mean, kinda. So I feel like it's an impossibility that it would just go away.
Yeah. And I guess maybe going away isn't really what I picture, but I feel like, as the same way that we can see so much of other tattooers' work at all times, the second it's done, we can look at it.
Yeah.
And we're all feeding off each other now more than ever.
It's been good for me, got to say.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I love it too. I love being able, influenced by so many different things. And, you don't have to do all the legwork anymore, and you can still get all the goods, which is, some people would say that's what's wrong. And I would say that's what's right, because that's what I know.
Right. Yeah.
But, so I guess what I'm asking, not really as much as traditional imagery and tattoos disappearing, but as they morph and change, could they ever become almost unrecognizable? And for example, some people do straight up, they'll just do Flash. They'll just do Sailor Jerry Flash by the books. It's solid, it's good, but there's no style from them into it.
Yeah.
But then I feel like a lot of people at this point, if they're going to think, I'm just going to do a little traditional rose and draw it up, these days it's going to be like a Scott Sylvia rose, or it's going to be a Mike Wilson rose.
Yep.
You know, simple, bold, still from the same, comes from the same place, but yeah. Now that's like the new version of it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So, and as things evolve more and more and more, do you think it could ever get so far from where it began?
Yes, but I feel like if it's going to continue in the way that it has, which I know that it will, I feel like that can't happen for, it'll be way down the line. I'll probably be dead. I mean, I'm past the halfway mark in my life at this point now. I'm not going to be 100 when I die, so it'll, something like that could probably happen and probably will happen, but that I won't see that.
And I bet if that ever did happen, there would be that one purist guy probably having a podcast screaming about kids these days, ruining all this stuff that he holds so sacred.
Yeah.
He or she will say, I did my apprenticeship in 2058, back when things were good.
Yeah, exactly. No, of course. I mean, that's the same as what we were talking about before, is that whatever is going to be the old days, or whatever is going to be the good time, for the people. There's some people that I know now that have been tattooing for, let's say, 5, 6 years, 7 years, something like that. This time right now is like the best to them, where, to people like me, it's great, it's cool, but it's not like it was.
Yeah. Where in your own career, where do you, if you had to place where it peaked, as far as like where you think the coolest time to be part of tattooing was, when was that?
For me, I'm not going to say for everybody. I'm not going to say for everybody, but for me, I'd been tattooing for 15 years. And I mean, the truth of it is that probably the first like 8 years of it, or nine, I sucked, Andrew. The tattoos, you just didn't have information. So you were kind of chasing this thing of building this thing of making it look the way that you wanted to. But if you didn't have your hands on direct information, or weren't able to speak to people directly about stuff, which in those days you were not able to do that all the time, unless you were constantly traveling or putting yourself in those positions so that you could speak to people and get it right. If you were staying in one place with a family and trying to, pursue what you were trying to do with tattooing, it took forever to make them look the right way. So after like 10 year mark, 11, 12 years, I started gaining some ground. I started like getting some footing and going like, man, I would like look at a picture like that I took with film on a camera, turned it in after the 36 or 24 pictures were up, and then got them back and were able to use maybe half of them or less than half. Right. And that's also with taking multiple pictures of each tattoo.
Right. Yeah. You'll have a whole roll of one tattoo.
Yeah, for sure. Easily. Lots of times. Like which would have been like your best tattoo or your best effort. You really put a lot into it, because you're just using like, the way you think a hand you would like a hand to look in this tattoo out of a, like the Tibetan book, or, you know, and you put it together and you try your fucking best. Now you can try your best. It takes less effort, which I appreciate. But at that time, you were gathering the stuff that you, resources that you had to make it look the right way, and still trying to make it look like it's your own, which is a whole separate fucking thing. But anyway, at about 12 years or 13 years, I was working in Laguna and Laguna Beach in California. And it's a resort town, and there's lots of tourists, and there's lots of people that go down there that just want little things. And through
great place to tattoo, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I worked there for 10 years, almost to the day. I worked for 5 years for Rick, where I started. And then after that, right around the 15 year mark was when I left there, and I went to this place called Gold Rush. And I was asked to go and work there. And I felt like at that moment, here I'd been working in for 10 years in Laguna, and I was really studying what I was trying my hardest. I was trying my hardest, the hardest I've ever tried. These are in the days that I was making needles twice a week, every week for 16 years. I made liners on Tuesdays and shaders on Fridays. And information about that started to become a little bit more accessible. I was trying to learn to, well, I'd learned to paint. I had kind of gotten a handle on how I wanted it to look. So I was able to undertake some painting and not think at the beginning, this thing's going to be terrible. I had an idea of like, man, I could probably make this look the way that I want it to look with some confidence. And then my tattooing through those things came along too. And this had to do with working with other people that I worked with in Laguna, Chaz, John, and Greg, where we, you know, we're all shooting for the same thing of like trying to make them look kind of a certain way, each of us similar, and wanted to make them look the way that we were seeing in like international tattoo art. Really, that's what it was. That was like the way of knowing for us. And at about 13, 14, 15 years, I wasn't getting like overly confident, but I was confident in like, I think I know how to do this. So when I got asked to go to Gold Rush, it was a bunch of people that were slightly younger than me who'd been tattooing a little bit less time, who were all really good, who were all really, really fucking good. And they invited me to come and work with them. And that for me was like, I'd attained something. Like I couldn't tell you what exactly, I don't know, but they were like, hey, I'll never forget. I went by there because it was next to where I used to get my hair cut. And I was just going over there because my friend Jim Miner was one of the co-owners. And I was just going over there because I would go and visit any tattoo shop. You know, it's like if you are a skater and you see a skate shop, or you're into music and you see a record store, you go in there. So I was going by there and just saying hi and stuff. And then at this point they were open. Jim came and talked to me, and he was like, hey, how long have you been in Laguna? And I go, 10 years. And he was like, well, what would you say about coming over here? And I go, yes. And he went, that's a fast answer. Are you sure? And I go, I'm positive. Yeah. And he was like, when do you want to start? I go, now, as soon as possible. And I went over there. So at that point, I took what I had really concentrated and learned on for that first 15 years. And I felt like I was being put into a position where I could learn and work off of all of the people that were younger than me, but were really good and had been tattooing for a while. And I could take what I'd learned and what I was looking to get and learn from them too, and come up with tattoos that I, you know, that like I could do them better. And I did start doing tattoos better. And I started like,
so that was your turning point.
It was, I swear to God it was. And that was it, to the 15 year mark. Yeah. And I wanted to go and do more conventions and stuff like that. Albrigo, my friend Daniel Albrigo, who I worked with there, who I'm still friends with, he was at my wedding, and I love him. We got invited. This is another thing. Like when I was in Laguna, it was a small tattoo shop, well known, it's cool. People like, you know, knew about it, and they knew that they could go down there and get tattooed, and had a reputation of one of the longest standing tattoo shops in Orange County. All that stuff was great. But we weren't getting like invitations to get a free booth in like, you know, some other part of the country at a tattoo convention. And what was happening at, which is cool, we still did conventions and stuff like that, but there was this different opportunity thing that was happening where I went, and they offered us a free booth at this tattoo convention in like Augusta, Georgia, right? So Daniel was like, do you want to go do this thing with me? And to him, he came from a different time where going and working a tattoo convention in Augusta was like just kind of something funny to go and do. And it would, I mean, he was into it like I was, but he saw it from a different way. He was used to it. And to me, he was like, you want to go do this thing in Augusta? Like, they're giving us a booth and we can go over there together. And I was like, yeah, fuck. This is fucking awesome. Yeah, I want to go do that. So we went and did that together. It was the first tattoo convention I did with the shop. It was just me and him. We hung up banners that said Gold Rush. And it was like a turning point. It was a time. And this is in about 2006 or seven. And this was kind of also at like a boom for tattooing of exposure. And he and I came back from that. And I felt like I felt very close to Daniel, and we accomplished this thing together, and we're still friends. And then there was like these other conventions that came up that we would just naturally go and do as a group. This was something that was new to me. We went and did things as a group in Laguna, but this was this like a different kind of a thing for me to go and do it like that. And then some weird shit happened in my personal life. That was a sad, weird time after I turned 40. And I was kind of like found a lot of time on my hands. And Tim Hendricks was working at Gold Rush at that point. And that he and I had known each other a little bit before that, but we got close after that. He was also neighbors with my wife, who I'm married to now. And we became close, and he was like, hey man, just like so off the cuff of like, oh, we're just do this thing. Do you want to do it? It changed my whole fucking life. It changed my whole life. He said, hey, Mickey Violetto is doing the Milan convention. He's giving us a booth. Do you want to come with me? And same way that I answered Jim, I was just like, yeah. And he goes, we're going to be there for a while. And like, you know, it'd be fun though. And I was like, dude, this was like offering me fucking like, you know, a ticket to fly to the moon. I was like, yeah, I want to go and fucking do that for sure. So me and him and Eric Jones went out there and did the Milan convention. I'm telling you, at that point, that was like just the best. Like the whole world opened up to me, not just the tattoo world. And all the people, all the really wonderful and great people that I've met and I still love and have accepted me during that period of time. But just it changed everything.
With tattooing being such a mental thing, and we're all in our heads as we do stuff, I feel like to get opportunities like that is, it's just going to do so much for your confidence and so much for everything, where it's just simply going on a trip is right. Can change you forever. And you're explaining.
Yeah. And it did to this day. I remember so well the flight getting there, where I stayed, realizing there was a language barrier. I mean, I'd been to Europe before. I went over there to get tattooed before, like I told you a couple of different times. Sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't. Mm-hmm. But I was generally in places where they spoke English. So I booked this trip. And I should also mention that during that period of time, it was busy as can be, crazy busy during those years. And I was doing really, really good because there were a lot of people that were doing tattoos, but less than now. So I was able to put a bunch of money away, you know, fly to Milan, stay in a hotel for over a week, go around. I went, like I got on a train and I went to Verona and visited my friend Beppe at his shop. And this was all like dreamland. It still is to me, but it was like fucking the just dream world. And I was able to like listen to my iPod and go on the train looking at Italy as I was like I can't believe it happened even now. But it took time, and you know, it took money, and it took like, you know, being able to plan it and make sure that my kids were okay while I was gone and all that stuff. And it, I mean, I look back on it now. I can put it this way. We went and did it 2 years in a row. And I had, like I said, I had to deal with like, I fucking left the hotel after I checked in and no one spoke English. And I had to like find the grocery store because the hotels had refrigerators in them. So I wanted to get food and put it in the refrigerator. Mickey Violetto hooked it up because we were going with Tim. That is basically what happened. Mm-hmm. So I was walking to this store. I asked somebody directions. They were pissed off that I didn't speak Italian, which that's cool. I understand that. And this girl, this woman who was walking, just going the same direction as me, I heard her say to her son, "Henry, don't do that," in English. And I walked over to her and I did not, I mean, usually I don't expect that people are going to be super open and friendly ever here or anywhere. But I went over to her and it was just out of necessity. I had to say something to this person. If they shut me down, cool, but they spoke English. And I go, "You speak English?" And she went, "Yeah." Like it was no thing. Yeah. And this is the day I got there. And you fly for so long, it's like you're disoriented. So I said, "I'm trying to find a grocery store." And she goes, "Well, we're going to the grocery store. Oh, you come with us." I'll never forget that. I'll never, ever forget it. And we're walking. I go, "Where are you from? How do you live here?" And she goes, "Oh, my husband got a job in Milan." She goes, "I'm from Newport Beach." I was like, "That's where I'm from. I'm from Orange County too. I live in Newport Beach." And she was like, "Oh yeah, cool." Like it wasn't any big fucking thing.
Yeah.
So we went to the grocery store. She goes, yeah, you can get, you know, good luck. I'm like, "Thank you so much." So what I started to say a second ago, but I started telling you about the lady at the store was, I think back on that period of time and being able to go and do those things. And like, I met Henning Jorgensen when I was there. He and I are still friends. I hung out with Mo Coppoletta, who I'd been tattooed by here in California at Juan Puente's house on his kitchen table when he was here for the first time in America, I think. But I hung out with him there. He's Italian. So we like went to restaurants together. He helped us order and all this stuff. Dude, this to me was like, I couldn't fucking believe it that these things were happening to me in my life. And now that it's been a few years since then. It was 2007 or 2008 when we went and did that. But if I were to get hit by a car walking back to the subway, or if I were to, you know, if there were some terrible accident or something like that, or I happened to step off the ledge at the subway and got killed, I wouldn't be unhappy with how things have gone in my life in the tattoo world and what it has given me, because it means everything to me.
Damn. I love that. It's really true that you hold on to those experiences.
It's true.
And that's the kind of stuff that you share in a situation like this, or with kids, or with anyone.
Those are the building blocks.
Yeah.
Those are the things.
Right.
The puzzle pieces.
It's what we're standing on top of. And then you can always look down. You'll see your building blocks.
Yeah.
And so think about now how easy it is to access information. Think about a 20-year-old kid right now.
Yeah.
Who tattoos better than you and me combined.
They do.
And can they still appreciate an experience like that the same way when they get it right off the bat? And I don't want to say it's handed to them, because everyone has to work to, you know, towards what they get, even if it takes less time.
Right. But naturally it's just going to take less time now.
Yeah. But after 1 year of hard work, can you appreciate something like that the same way that you did after 15 plus years of struggling and finding out and trial and error?
I don't think so. I just think because you don't have the capacity I'm only speaking from my own experience, but when you're that young and you gain that much footing that fast, which people do now, and I'm happy for them. It's cool that they can get it the way that they do. And I'm glad that they're able to get a hold of things quickly, because there's such a struggle involved before. And if you get a hold of it and you're doing well after 2 or 3 years or one, for example, right? I don't know really, unless it's just ingrained in you in the way that you were brought up, or how things are important to you in your life leading up to that time. But I don't see how you could have the capacity to appreciate it in the same way without having to without being able to look back and go like, man, all this other shit happened and now I get to do this. Because if you're looking back at 12 months and you go, let's be fair and say 3 years. If you're looking back at a couple of years of it being difficult and then you're able to go and like meet everyone that you ever dreamed of meeting and becoming friends with them, how can it have the same, the same weight or impact?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wish for those people that they do get to do those things, because if it means anything close to the ways that it has made me feel, I want people to feel that too. But I don't know how it could be as important.
Maybe there's just different goals or there's different peaks that people will strive for now. If the things that you strive for are much more attainable, then there's got to be something else.
Yeah.
But is there? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know either, man.
It's not like there's just endless things to do. It's kind of like...
There's a limit on things that can be done, I feel like, or combinations of things that can be done. I feel like there's a limit on that. But
It's like being a rich kid.
It's just like being a rich kid.
You can't blame them for not appreciating something when they've done it a million times.
No.
For nothing.
No, you can't, because they don't. They know no different.
Yeah.
So if there's... Like, it's like... Instagram or social media that exposes you to the things that you can get and just have almost immediately now. You can't really blame people younger tattooers, men or women, teenagers for that matter, doesn't matter. You can't really blame them for seeing it and going, oh, I can do that. I should try to do that. Or, I mean, if you can order that stuff on your without ever leaving your phone and having it delivered without ever really even leaving your house or finding those building block things, that's their building blocks, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you can just kind of like get a hold of that stuff. And I mean, there's no shortage of people that'll get tattooed by you, because people that get tattoos now are aware of things being like stick and poke, I say, with, you know, quotation fingers, or things having like a scratchy sort of a look about them. People know about that now that are 17, 18 years old. So they know if it's probably not that big of a thing to them to just get something done like that, because if it comes out that way, it's still sort of cool.
Well, their style's born out of inability.
The style was born out of inability back then too, but it was a different. It was a different thing, because I was not I had no artistic ability. I learned to draw things and by copying shit and then making my hand work in such a way to draw those things the best I could on my own without copying it, so that I could do tattoos. I have no artistic ability, but I forced myself to learn it so I could attempt to do tattoos. It's the same thing now. It's just an entirely different world. It's like it's an entirely different world. It's like a whole different atmosphere, different point of reference. Like, all that stuff that is relative to now is where they're looking at it from, which is, I can't fault anybody for it. You know, that's what they see.
Yeah. And as far as apprenticeships go, most people are not doing apprenticeships. It just doesn't exist the way that it once did.
I know. And it's sad to me, because those are the things, like my teacher, Rick. Okay. Well, without getting, this is a whole different thing, but like, I didn't, like, my dad wasn't really around me when I was younger, and I'm not saying he was my father figure, but I interacted with him in ways that I imagine now are the way that you would interact with your dad. He was only 10 years older than me, but he was teaching me. He was older than me. He knew what to do. He gave me a job.
He was a million tattoo years older than you.
100 million years older than me, because his dad did tattoos. So now looking back, or even at the time, not even looking back, but at the time that it happened, I felt these things that I thought like I'd be driving home from work and I'd be like, man, that was sort of, I guess that was kind of like what it would be like if you were with your dad and he taught you something. You know, like, he's not my all-time father figure, but he showed me some shit that I was unaware of, and not just about, I'm not even talking about tattoos. I'm talking about like life. So those things to me were like vital to the apprenticeship thing. So those are the kinds of things that I have inside my mind with my son apprenticing with me, is that I'm his actual dad. So for me to be able to teach him some things that I do know about, like, for example, when he was younger and he got involved in skateboarding, that was on his own. That was on his own. I let him do the things that he wanted to do. He got involved in skateboarding because of the area that we were in and the kids that he was, you know, that he looked at the things that they did and he was interested in it, they skated. So when he told me, yeah, like, I want to go to this skate park, or I want to learn how to put a board together, I was like, dude, this is fucking awesome, because I know how to do that. If he had told me, like, he wants to play football, I'd learn about it, but I know nothing about sports. I have no interest in it whatsoever. So for him now to say, like, this is for sure what I want to do. Here's these paintings that I'm doing, and I'm doing, you know, can you show me how to do this or that? Seeing him progress at that stuff, for me, it goes back to, like, we were talking, this circles back all the way around to the beginning. It's like, man, you want to learn this stuff? I know all about this shit. I can tell you all this stuff, and I'm happy to do it because you're my actual son.
I wouldn't know who I would ever want to teach to tattoo. And when you have, when it's your son, that's the one time where it's like no hesitation.
Right. And I've never shown anybody how to tattoo things from beginning to end. Never. Not in all this time. Never have had any desire to, swear to God.
Because what do you get out of it?
Nothing. And the thing that I'm afraid of getting out of it is giving up information that I've worked more than half my fucking life to learn and own, and to kind of, like, really have a deep understanding of it. And it scares the living shit out of me to open up this part of this thing and go, here's this secret of this thing that I know, and having someone, not him, but this is the reason why I've never shown anybody this shit, is because it took me my lifetime to figure these things out. For me to just go, oh, here's this thing that I learned. No, man, no one showed me that way. So it kills me to think of giving those things up to someone who doesn't care. That's why I've never showed anybody anything, but have them just be like, oh, it's just this piece of information. It's just this piece of paper. That piece of paper is everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause it's too easily acquired.
Right.
And yeah. Yeah. It's weird. And I know that personally I have the inclination to teach. I like to teach. I was going to be a teacher before tattooing, but I still, I have zero interest in ever teaching anyone a tattoo, because I don't see the point. I mean, what's the point? That, why do people apprentice someone? Because they want someone to work for them. It's their kid, which to me is like a legitimate reason to pass on something to a family member.
Right.
But what other reason is there? You want to feel important. You want to feel like you're above someone. It doesn't seem like good motivation a lot of times.
I feel like a lot of it, and this always trips me out too, this goes along the lines of what you're talking about, is I'm always tripped out by people who offer apprenticeships. And that's cool, because it's not me. Cool. If that's the feeling that you have, that you want to do that, and that you get something out of it by teaching this and passing this stuff along, totally. I don't identify with that all the time. I identify with it with my son, but I have not identified with that feeling or the urge to do that up until now. Mm-hmm. But I've never gotten it that you would have like a bunch of people that you're teaching, because like I gained that information from working for it myself and from being literally afraid to ask the questions. And most of the time I didn't. Most of the time I did not ask those questions. I still don't. It was by getting tattooed by somebody and watching what they were doing, or having them offer up the information without me ever saying anything, and then me going, fuck, I'm so glad they said that, because I wasn't supposed to ask. So that thing of like, oh, I have this apprentice, or this is my apprentice, that's like the biggest thing in the world. That's like, you know, that would be like giving up everything. And I just can't really see doing that all the time. I don't know what you would really gain from it. I don't really know what you gain from it. Maybe it would be a thing of being
able to sweep the floor.
I guess it's that. But I mean, I don't really ever look at it that. I've never really even looked at stuff like that in terms of like somebody else like having their function be that. Like, I wouldn't be able to think that far ahead.
Yeah, because to me, the money it would take to pay someone to sweep your floor is worth a lot less than your information and the stuff that you've gathered.
100%.
But a lot of people don't see it that way.
Well, they think different than me. That's all.
Maybe they don't value what they know as much. And maybe that's something within them that's...
I feel like they do value what they know, but they think, but they're able to share it and get something out of it that letting people know what it is that I don't understand.
Yeah. And I, like you're saying, I guess if that's part of their experience that they seek, then how can you really knock it?
Yeah. That's like, you know, I guess it's the same as someone who stops tattooing. I don't understand that either, but that's someone else.
Sure. So how is someone even to go about learning to tattoo anymore? If the, like the whole apprenticeship thing to me just doesn't seem that available.
It seems like an antiquated thing.
Yeah.
Okay. My son did his first tattoo on himself on his 24th birthday. His first time that he had tattooed me before. He did the title of a song that he and I both like from the Sex Pistols on my ankle. His sister has tattooed me. She put Raw Power on the same foot, same side, but, it not, you know, serious tattooing, like, you know, do this drawing, make a stencil of the drawing, set the machines up. This is all like part of what's going on. And it's just going to be me and you. It's just going to be me and you. Shop, we're doing it after hours. Everyone's gone. No pressure around you, fucking tripping you out on purpose. Like, this is going to be me and you. And this is something that's ultra important. And that we do it on your birthday. This is a gift from me to you. Probably the most important gift your whole fucking life. We're going to do this thing together. And we did. And it went like, fuck, I got to admit, it went like pretty okay. He's not like as intimidated or struck by the act of it as I was when I did my first tattoo, because he worked around it. When I did my first tattoo, I'd only been around it. So I didn't, like, setting up a machine and tattooing myself seemed completely alien. But to him, he sees people set up machines and he takes them apart and has a much better understanding of things. And then for him to tattoo himself was something that he'd been dreaming of doing for a long time, was actually happening. It was more excitement than fear. So when it was all said and done, you know, it looked good. And he wrapped himself up and did all the things that he is going to end up doing on other people. And we closed up the shop, turned off the lights, put the gate up, split. And we're walking to the car and I go, how do you feel? Like, how does this make you feel? And he wasn't like, man, I feel on top of the world. I feel like this is the best thing ever. He was like, I feel good. Like, it went okay. And he wasn't like crazy expectations about how it was. Right. And he goes, but it's really hard. And I go, it's my exact words to him were, it's near impossible. It's nearly impossible to do this fucking shit. And he goes, well, I mean, he doesn't want to say that because he wants to do it. You know, but me in retrospect, I look back and think like, it's impossible. The insane shit that you put yourself through in order to learn the thing and then to do tattoos that you think are decent after 15 years. And it's much less time now, of course, but you know, all of that stuff is like, God, it seems crazy. It seems crazy impossible. So I feel like circle back around to the question that you asked, I feel like people, when they, like, maybe there's no apprenticeship available, maybe there's no thing that they can follow that's the same way that you or I did, but by way of seeing everything constantly, constantly, every second, constantly on your phone, just never ending on your phone, Instagram, that's all, right? There is no reason why you should be doing tattoos that don't look passable. For real, if you see a tattoo that somebody just did and you know that that person's been tattooing for a couple of years because you know that person or because you've spoken to that person by way of your phone, how long have you been tattooing? Oh, I started in 2016, right? And they're doing really nice tattoos, like excellent tattoos, ones that I cannot do and probably won't, right? But they see that it's instantly attainable and it's doable. It's like skateboard tricks, okay? When I was first skateboarding, when I very first started, it was the late 70s. So there weren't as many things that people did because those tricks had not been invented. So when you come into it, you come into it at the level that you see other people doing it. So you know what's possible then. So if you are you go to a skate park and you can do like a tail tap or a rock and roll or like a board slide or something like that, you're pushing the limits because these are things that were new at that time in like 1980, right? People were doing this stuff. You could see pictures of it in skateboard magazines. And if you were kind of like you were kind of in line with doing that kind of stuff and you were willing to push those limits and you could learn those tricks because you'd seen them done. But the stuff that you had never seen done, the stuff that you'd never seen, it's impossible to you. You don't know it unless you feel like you can invent new shit, which people did. But the average skater was just doing the things that they saw was possible to do. So at this point in 2019, let's say you're a young tattooer or someone who wants to tattoo. You've had it put in your mind that this is something that you are determined to do. You're looking at what's possible all goddamn day and night and second. So if you see that there's a beautiful tattoo from someone who's your age, there's really no reason why you can't obtain the shit to do it. There's no shortage of people that will get tattoos, crappy or not. You can advance to the point quickly so that you're doing pretty passable fucking nice tattoos in a short period of time. But it's because it's relative to the exposure that is there. I feel like that's what that is.
I think the brightest and youngest tattooers are the ones who have found how to have the work ethic from when there was no information available. Mm. Mixed with the actual accessibility to everything.
Totally. I agree. But there's not everybody like that.
No.
And I feel like when you meet people that are like that, that are young and they appreciate it and have, you can see it, you know, you can see it. And when, not just in the work, in when you look at them or when they interact with you, you can see it and feel it. And when it's those two things together, sometimes it's like the best. It's the best to see that because you know that they appreciate it for the truth. And you know that they, you know that they'll, if they're getting it and they also appreciate that stuff to like get those building blocks, who knows where they'll go, you know?
Yeah. And they deserve it as much, if not more than anyone, because like we were saying, it's hard to appreciate something that's just right in front of you for the taking.
More, I think more, because if you're able to see past that, that's better than most people that are looking at it. If you're able to delve into it in that way and see past it and really seek it, that's like, you know, that's, you got to appreciate somebody who can see that even more.
Yeah. Those are the people that I root for. Definitely.
Yeah, totally. Me too.
Yeah. And hopefully they take on 10 to 15 apprentices each and instill that same passion into them.
God, let's hope that they can get it the same way.
Well, I think we might have talked about everything. Is there anything else you want to touch on? Any messages to the public? To the three or four people that are going to hear this?
I would like to say, since I have the opportunity on this day, on this important day, I would like to say thank you very much to my wife, Leah, for being encouraging to me and for being sweet and encouraging and understanding me. Thank you very much, Leah.
It's hard to find a partner in life that can understand what being with a tattooer is like. Would you agree or disagree?
I totally agree. And somebody who's willing to be accepting of those things, because I feel like not all tattooers, but at least the ones that I know, are not in a bad way, slightly out of their minds. And I know for sure my mind, I'm totally fucked. My mind is crazy. And she is able to understand those things and along with my kids to be accepting of what I am. And I'm endlessly appreciative of that.
If someone just tuned into that last statement out of context, they would think that you're like Frankenstein or when they're in tune with what I am. But it's true. It's kind of a feeling of like you're not a normal person as a tattooer.
No.
But do you think anyone who owns their own business kind of has a similar thing where it never shuts off? It's all you think about.
I can name one person who's exactly like that. It's who I work for, Tim. And he is endlessly helping other people. It never, ever, ever, ever shuts off, the tattoo thing. He lives for it. Like when I say I'm involved in it, Tim is like, it is so much more involved in it and builds everything, is good at everything. Like this is something that Tim, man, like I give him so much credit for being, you know, so immersed in it. And it just never, being a business owner, it multiple businesses, by the way, it never shuts off. It's always like full bore.
Yeah. That's the hardest thing that I experience, is just having a life outside of tattooing.
Yeah, no, I'm completely married to it. I'm married to Leah, and then I'm married to tattooing and my kids, and then the music thing that we talked about before. Like, those are really the only things that I know anything about. I'm not really all that bright. I have like those things that I'm interested in, and I know everything that there is to know about those things, or I try to know just about everything that I can get my hands on that has to do with that stuff. And I mean, that's, I'm so consumed with all of that all the time that there isn't anything else.
Well, if we were smart, we wouldn't be tattooers.
That's the truth. You know what? You're right. It's a true statement.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me, man. It's such an honor. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Likewise.
Yeah.
I want to thank Lindsay Carmichael for being on the show. If you want to follow his work, you can check him out on Instagram at Lindsay Carmichael. And that's Lindsay with an E-Y, C-A-R-M-I-C-H-A-E-L. And go get tattooed by him at Classic Tattoo in Fullerton, California. As always, I'm Andrew Stortz, and if you want to follow me, you can find me on Instagram at Andrew Stortz, S-T-O-R-T-Z. One last big thank you to our sponsors this week, Machine Machine Co., as well as Tattoo Smart, who are two tremendous supporters of this podcast, so thank you both very much. If you like this show, give it a 5-star rating now. I demand it. And give it a great review on iTunes, because it helps other people find the show and hopefully enjoy it as much as you do. If you want to learn more about Books Closed, you can go to our website at booksclosedpodcast.com, where you can find show notes, links to guests, other episodes, videos of those episodes, and so on and so forth. Next week we'll be back, and I would tell you who the guest was going to be, but I forgot. Sorry. You'll have to tune in to find out then.